When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And welcome, everybody, to another episode of Pulse of Finns Nation. I am your host, Louis Sung. I am Louis Sung. I did it again, man. I'm slurring my words. It's, again, another 8-plus-hour workday just completely shutting me down. I am Louis Sung. That is my name, Louis Sung. I am joined by Eric Weideke. I am joined by Chris Early, otherwise known as Duke. Ron Caniff will be along shortly. He's running a little bit late since he's having to deal with some technical difficulties. With that being said, there's plenty to talk about. We're going to try to get into as much of it as we possibly can. This week was filled with Miami Dolphins news since the last show that we did. Really quick, let's just get it out the way. Of course, jerseys305.com is the place you want to go if you want to get some awesome classic memorabilia. I'll play the video for you guys.
Hey, it's Ethan Skolnick for the Five Reasons Sports Network. We've got a great new sponsor that fits with us perfectly. It's called jerseys305.com. That's jerseys305.com. This is your home for dead stock and vintage jerseys from the Heat, Panthers, Dolphins, Marlins, and the other local teams. Their mission was born from a passion for wearing jerseys of the old styles and the past players. Jerseys 305 aims to make every fan stand out from the crowd with unique pieces that you don't commonly see anymore. Maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago, but not today. And Jerseys 305 was created by the fans, for the fans. They're diehards just like you. In fact, they're probably listening to this episode right now. So check them out. Jerseys 305, their partnership with Five Reasons Sports, celebrating with a 10% discount on the next purchase using the code 5 at checkout. Unlock your exclusive savings on the entire vintage collection.
And speaking of jerseys, Jason Stamps in the chat saying that Duke still needs that Liam Eichenberg jersey. I would be embarrassed to wear a jersey like that, man. That's just me. I don't want Liam Eichenberg anywhere near my body or anywhere else.
I can be honest with you. This sounds a lot like how we talked about Austin Jackson exactly at this time.
No, Ron. No, because remember, Austin Jackson had the 14 snaps.
Because he had the 14 snaps.
Yes, he did. He showed some level of promise somewhere, and that was why, you know what, maybe it's not too late. Maybe it's still time to redeem him. Eichenberg has not had 14 snaps.
He's actually had way more. I can get Coach Eric to find you 14 snaps.
In a row?
Maybe not in a row, but 14.
That was Austin Jackson. 14 snaps in a row.
There. He's not as bad as people think he's going to be here.
Everybody has a good snap. Even Dallas Thomas had good snaps. Okay.
The Dolphins don't trust bad players. If they think there's a player that isn't going to get it done for them, they don't keep them around out of loyalty. They get rid of them. Same thing with coaches. They get rid of them in a hot minute. McDaniel and Greer don't mess around with that. He's there because they trust him.
And somehow Lester Cotton's still on the team, though.
He's a backup, though.
Is he, though?
Well, that's what makes us hurt.
Is he a backup? He's a backup at the position that Mike McDaniel clearly feels is the least important position on the football field.
Yeah. Agreed. Oh, Lewis, yes, my voice is back. Here we go. Lewis Sr. there said, Ron, your voice is back. Yes. When we did Finns Nation on Friday to talk about McDaniel's extension, I got to play with the settings and figure out why I was sounding like this. So I got to fix it. Now it's my normal high and whiny voice back again.
But since the Duke and Eric didn't get a chance to really talk about it, let's go ahead and quickly revisit that. For those of you who did not listen to Finns Nation, like Ron said, we briefly discussed the breaking news of Mike McDaniel's extension all the way through to the 2028 season. So with that being said, Duke, I'll start with you. Your reaction to the news of him being signed all the way. It's only been two seasons and already he's going to be kept around for at least until 2028. So apparently Stephen Ross has seen enough. He's been convinced. What are your thoughts about this? Hello, Duke.
Um, Why wouldn't you be?
Why wouldn't you be what?
Can you hear me now?
I hear you now. I want to be a little loud. How much did you hear of what I said?
You said, you know, what, you know, you were talking about, you know, Stephen Ross sending enough. Why wouldn't he deserve an extension? Two winning seasons in a row, two playoff appearances in a row. He's got the best offense in the league. Things are only looking up. You're locked in with your quarterback. You're locked in with your head coach. So a smart decision. Keep the continuity going. At this point, my only concern for the coaching staff is who's going to get poached for future teams. So I like what they are. I like what they're doing.
Eric, your thoughts on the Mike McDaniel extension so early into his tenure?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there was a very, 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 very small minority of fans that would have said, if the Dolphins didn't make the playoffs this season, or if something were to happen, Mike McDaniel should be on the hot seat. And I think that this is Stephen Ross's way of saying, no, this is our guy. This is what we believe in. He has a system. He has a philosophy. We believe in it. We're gonna continue to grow in it. And I think that that's probably the right way to go about things. You don't want McDaniel even having, you know, any of those kinds of doubts in his head of, you know, oh boy, you know, what if, you know, you don't want your team thinking that way going into a season. And so you give him the security, just like he gave Tua the security going into the season. And you know, these guys are going to keep rolling and doing what they're doing.
I think the most exciting part that's going to come from this is the new swag that we're going to see from McDaniel. $120,000 watch when he was making what, $3 million? And bringing home $1.5 million. I mean, pretty much spent almost 10% of his first year salary on a watch. So I got to know what's coming down. I see he's got some new footwear he's been kicking out. I looked at him. I forget what the brand is, man. I'm sorry, I'm not a brand guy, but I'll never be able to keep up with McDaniel and the swag and what he wears because everything he wears is just times 25 out of my price range.
I've never been one to consider myself a fashionista. As my philosophy, I mean, I'm wearing a hoodie right now. This is just, I like to be comfortable. I only dress up for my lady. That's the only exception to the rule. So, with that being said,
you know, I just want to touch on this really quickly. Am I the only one that thinks that the sunglasses McDaniel rocks on the sidelines are a little bit Shula-esque?
I mean, I don't remember Brian Flores ever wearing sunglasses. Well, maybe a couple of times here and there, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
But Jason Stamp says, yes, absolutely, to the Shula-esque. It's actually fitting that we're talking about this right now because the comparison of Shula and McDaniel and even Flores to some extent, since he's also a part of this as this predecessor. Apparently, every once in a while, somebody can say something and it'll just blow up for no different reason, even though sometimes I say the exact same thing and it doesn't do it. But this time, I guess Stephen A. Smith on ESPN finally said something so utterly egregious that it couldn't be denied just how bad it was. It's not even a matter of opinion anymore. It's just he literally just does not have any of his facts right. Did you know that Brian Flores did not have Jaylen Waddle on his roster, guys? Did you know that? Did you know that that was the case? Because I could have sworn that there was somebody by the name of Jaylen Waddle who was a rookie and broke a lot of records in his first year as the Miami Dolphin.
He broke the wide receiver rookie record for receptions, the NFL record. So, yes, under Brian Flores. He was definitely his blankie. He was Tua's blankie that year, that's for sure.
I mean, he was the only one with some level of talent. You can make the argument. Like, Lynn Bowden Jr. Like, I don't like to disrespect certain players when they actually did produce to some extent. Lynn Bowden Jr., yeah, he was there. Isaiah Ford, yeah, he was there. Jakeem Grant was there.
A who's who of NFL greats.
I mean, listen, as far as returning goes, Jakeem Grant could have been a
happy retirement to Jakeem Grant, by the way.
Oh, I thought he signed on with the team. Did he decide?
No, he retired like 3 days after.
Oh, I didn't even realize that. Yeah. Oh, congratulations on your retirement.
I mean, he'll still go down as one of the most exciting returners we've ever had. Certainly a heck of a lot more exciting than Braxton Berrios ever will be.
Before we get into the show, I like the new background there, Eric. It's looking good. You got a whole thing happening there. Looks like you got some LED light or something like that behind the Marino. Is that a Marino signed and framed jersey, I assume?
It is indeed.
Nice. I don't have any such relics, unfortunately.
I mean, you've got a rotating background on the TV. That's fancy, man.
Yeah, I know. That's going to be each week. It'll have pictures from the previous game.
It's going to be like the elevator.
Yeah, it's going to be pictures from the previous game each week. This is just still in off season mode.
That's nice, man.
You gotta do a reveal every week like they do.
Oh, okay.
Jason Stamps is saying he's excited to see the real kickoff strategy. Well, let's go ahead and get into the talk about the season. First and foremost, if we're going to be talking about the Dolphins starting the season strong, let me be very clear about this. Kickoffs will have absolutely nothing to do with it because Braxton Berrios is still going to be the returner for the Miami Dolphins. He just is.
I don't think there is any, by the way, a little tiny bit of kind of inside information. I'm pretty sure I have it on good authority. There is no fancy, they haven't revealed kickoff strategy for the Dolphins this year, by the way. If it happens later on, maybe, but that, as of right now, there isn't anything.
The strategy would be the strategy, if there ever was one, would be to just do the same thing that any other team would do. You get your best guy handling the football, and you make him do the returning, and you pray that he makes five people miss, and you run for a touchdown. That's the same strategy as the regular kickoffs.
You know, I gotta say though, I mean, they had two guys back there regularly throughout the preseason. What if, crazy thought here, it's Washington and Berrios?
I mean, they probably will be back there most of the time, but it's still gonna be Berrios making most of the catches.
I don't know about kickoff return. That's interesting. We start on special teams, but anyway, we'll end it real fast, I guess. But I think on punt returns, the strategy will be if it's just a clear, fair catch situation, you're going to see Berrios every time. If it looks like it's returnable, you're going to see Washington. That's my guess. I'll bet that's what they do.
AKW Beats in the chat says, "You sound better, Ron. You sounded like James Earl Jones for a couple of weeks."
As you were saying before, I know.
All the comments are just going to be about, "Ron sounds normal again."
My new old voice. I don't know. I listened to it, man. Like, for the first time I actually went and listened to it, I threw the YouTube on. I was like, "Oh, I really have to figure out how to fix this. This sounds terrible. I wish it sounded like James Earl Jones or, you know, something, but." No, it didn't. Just sounded
everything
like
the ball touches.
Yeah, it sounded great for a hostage video or something. Something like that.
All right.
What do you think, Duke, before we move off of special teams? Any thoughts on special teams?
I think they need to, if they want to make this the dynamic kick return, they need to move it up to the 35 instead of the 30 for touchbacks. It will incentivize returns. I think all it's going to take is a couple guys to break a few, and then it's going to be a kick out of the back of the end zone. Again, 5 yards doesn't make that much of a difference. Now, it depends for the Dolphins. It depends, you know, I don't care about the return factor as much because this offense, you know, assuming the offense plays like we expect it to play, they're going to go from the 25 – and or 30 yard line in about two plays to the 50. So, you know, we're going to be in plus territory very quickly. The what I want to know strategy wise is, you know, we've had issues with kick coverage. Are they just going to say, you know what, they like Weaver's defense. We think we can stop whoever we're facing. We're facing you know, the Cardinals or the Patriots or whoever, and they don't have a good offense. We're just going to boot it out of the back of the end zone and they can start from the 30 and we're going to get a stop. It's not going to matter. You know, maybe a team like the Bills, you might say, you know what, we'll take our chances with a return because we don't want to give Josh Allen extra yardage. So it'll be interesting to see that. Punts haven't changed, so it is what it is. Although I will say, you know, a lot of people like to bust on Jake Bailey. The last few punts he had in that final preseason game, he had one that was like 60 yards or something ridiculous. He pinned it inside the 10 from deep. So maybe he was a Pro Bowler at one point. So maybe he's got it ironed out now. So we'll see. Mm. I'm hoping the trends will be like last year, and they only punt like 30 times total. So
I think they're going to punt even less now.
We're hoping to kick less. We see him. Yeah, right, the less we see Jake Bailey, the better. And not because he's a bad player, just because we don't want to see punts.
The only time I want to see Jake Bailey a ton. I want to see him like 6-7 times a game holding for the extra point.
Yep.
And that's it. Well, that's the one I want to see him.
I mean, that would be awesome. I got to admit. Since we're talking about teams that we're going to take our chances with, let's go ahead and talk about it. Miami faces the Jacksonville Jaguars for their home opener. And let's see. Just going down the roster here, folks. So this is what we do. As a reminder, who the weapons for Jacksonville Jaguars are, you have Parker Washington. He's a wide receiver. Brian Thomas Jr., Eric, that's your boy there. You got Christian Kirk. Devin Duvernay is there. You got Gabe Davis, formerly of the Buffalo Bills, who is Miami's second week team. As far as the tight ends, you got Brenton Strange, who was potentially a Dolphins target once upon a time. Luke Farrell and Evan Ingram. So those are your veterans there. At running back, D'Ernest Johnson, Travis Etienne Jr. still there. Tank Bigsby. And, of course, Trevor Lawrence. And if something happens to him, you have Trevor Lawrence, too, which is Mac Jones. So
is that really Trevor Lawrence, too?
Was that disrespectful? I don't know. Technically speaking, from a statistical standpoint, Mac Jones and Trevor Lawrence are right there next to each other. Just needed to throw that out there.
Much for Trevor Lawrence.
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. That's why it just baffled me. It's like, oh, yeah, Trevor Lawrence definitely earned his deal, and then here's Tua. And he's like, how could you give Tua so much money? I'm like, what?
It's even worse when you consider Mac Jones had to play in that New England offense, and he had, like, nothing around him.
And also consider that there was literally one game that the Patriots won by him throwing the ball a total of 3 times.
Yes, against Buffalo.
Against Buffalo.
That was a fun game to watch, actually, from just a football fan perspective. That was a fun game to watch. He threw the 3 times. He completed 1 pass, and they won the game. Yeah, but so, let's talk. I don't know. You want to start with talking about that defense? What do you think, guys? What do you think, Duke? You want to talk about that defense, man? What are you looking forward to seeing in this game?
Miami's defense, I assume.
Yeah, Miami's defense. I don't give a shit about that.
looking at last year's stats, Jacksonville was the 9th best passing offense in terms of yards. They were 24th in run offense. So I think that plays into Miami's strengths. We really don't know what the run defense is going to look like, sans Christian Wilkins. But I do believe the secondary and particularly the linebacker group is going to be a little bit better. So I think we match up well there. But then again, you know, our run defense looked pretty good, except for week 1 of last year when Los Angeles ran for like 200 plus yards. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do there. I'm looking to see what Weaver implements and how that comes together. It looked fairly solid in the preseason, given what the preseason is. I think the guys took to it a lot quicker than they took to Vic Fangio's defense. So I think with the veteran players such as Campbell and Poyer and Fuller, guys who are familiar with a lot of schemes, played a lot of football, know how to communicate very well with one another. I think that's going to pay dividends for this defense early on. Whereas I don't think we're going to necessarily see that lag time that we've had when we changed coordinators in the past. So there's always like that learning curve, and then midseason they kind of pick up. I think we're going to see it early. I am interested to see how Jacksonville is going to what they're going to employ. I'm not necessarily a big fan of the receiving core. Evan Ingram scares me a little bit. Tight ends have always been kind of a weakness of the Dolphins. And so, exactly. So I am I'm interested to see that and how they plan to use ATN out of the backfield. I think we're going to see, I don't want to say overlap because I don't think it's the same schematically, but I think we're going to see some of the same usage. I think we're going to see a lot of Jonnu Smith. I think we're going to see a lot of Devon Achan in roles that we may not be expecting to see from them. You know, Hill and Water are going to get theirs. So, but I think this defense is going to take quickly to the total overall scheme. Now, another question mark with the defense is how is Weaver going to call it? He's been a play caller before, but it's been a little while. So that'll be interesting to see. So, and of course the rookies, you know, you've got Chop Robinson and Muhammad Kamara, and you expect to see a fairly good amount of those guys, given that I think Jalen Phillips is going to be on a pitch count. But by all accounts, it looks like Jalen Phillips is the starter and he's going to get runs. So,
yeah, I don't think that they're going to have Jalen Phillips on a pitch count at all, really. I think that he's full go. I think that he's shown everything he needs to show to prove that he's back to about as close as 100% as you can get without his muscle turning back into an overinflated balloon. Like, the man has even said it on Twitter. It's like, listen, you're not going to get that size that it was once upon a time, maybe ever again, but it still feels as strong as it ever was. So just because you don't look the part doesn't mean you're not strong. So
I was trying, when I watched the interview with him on the Levitard show, and, you know, he was, I was sitting there, I was watching, and I was trying to look at where, like, his leg, because you could really see it just to see, but I couldn't really tell a difference, so to speak. I would need to see them next to, you know, him standing there, a picture from behind his leg.
Side by side.
Yeah, just to see what the difference is.
I mean, I'm sure that there's someone out there who can make that happen. Just find some photos of Jalen Phillips before and Jalen Phillips after.
Well, they've already discussed that a little bit, haven't they? There was, you know, I saw stuff about it that he tweeted out. He was running and stuff, and people were saying your calf looks smaller. And then he,
yeah, that's the tweet that I mentioned. Yeah,
how that the muscle. So, it's probably never going to look the same again anyway. So as long as it's 100% healthy, who cares?
That's pretty much all there is to it. So I think that Jalen Phillips definitely going to be, yeah, you're right, Duke, the starter. I expect him to not be on a full pitch count. That's where I disagree with you on that. The second, and I truly believe at this point that I think we're going to see a lot more of Emmanuel Ogbah and probably even Mo Camara than we necessarily will of Chop Robinson. And it's not that I think it's a knock on Chop overall. It's just that during what we saw in preseason, during what we saw in training camp, the one thing that Chop does not do well so far is set the edge, and that's something he has to work on. Guys like Kamara and Ogbah, we already know they know how to set the edge a lot better. So on obvious passing downs, I fully expect to see Phillips and Chop out there. But if it's second and eight, or if it's third and four, sorry, my numbers are all mixed up. If it's a short yardage situation, I would expect to see
third and four was short yardage. You were good.
Yeah, but I said second and eight. That's not true.
No, I knew what you. I got what you mean. I honestly think you're gonna see a lot more Chop than people think. I think they really want to use his skill and ability to just that first step. And that little move he does to evade his guy and get behind, get back to the line of scrimmage, I'm telling you right now, give it a year, and that guy, he's going to be a monster. Teams are going to have to figure out where he is at all times. He is going to be a problem for teams. Now, I'm not saying he's going to be a problem day one. But he's going to be a serious problem. That little move is so quick. Man, I was watching all 22 on him. Hey, I was watching all 22, guys. I watched a bunch of Paul, I watched a bunch of Chop, and man, I was like, wow, so quick, man.
I think one of the things that we saw in preseason was he lined up his left defensive end with sand in the dirt, and that's all he did. I don't think we're going to see just that. Maybe not this week, but certainly against Buffalo, I would almost guarantee. He mentioned when he was drafted that he played the nose position. And if you go back and watch some Penn State, he plays lined up in the A gaps as a blitzer. So I think we're going to see him use that and use his explosiveness to create conflict for the center and the guard. And if nothing else, give somebody else an open lane. So, yeah, I think the moment we see, you know, they have the NASCAR package, the speed package, where you have Phillips Phillips and Chop and whoever else out there. But I agree with Lewis on the obvious running downs. It's going to be Phillips and it's going to be Ogba. But I think they're going to find ways to get him onto the field that we just haven't seen yet. So I'm excited to see what they do there. I'm hoping that he can, you know, with his athleticism, he can chase down Josh Allen a few times and get him in the backfield on those times where we almost had him and he got away. He's a different animal when it comes to that, the explosiveness and speed.
Jason Stanth pointing out that Chop and Channing Tindall on blitzes sounds awesome. So that's an interesting point. And Channing Tindall did actually make the roster for the Dolphins. Channing Tindall in preseason looked incredible as a pass rusher. Like that dude has so much athleticism, and we knew that going in. We knew that he was an extremely raw prospect with a lot of athleticism, a lot of talent, a lot of speed. It's just that up here in his head, he hadn't figured it out yet because he was still just that green as a linebacker. Now that he's being used, like if you really think about it, what Channing Tindall does best is what Jerome Baker does best, but he was never allowed to do it because he had to do everything else. Jerome Baker was phenomenal as a pass rusher, in the linebacking position. He was incredible. He never got to do it because he always had to cover the running back. He always had to cover the tight end because nobody else on the team could do it. It was, if Jerome Baker wasn't doing it at linebacker, nobody was. It was just a miserable experience otherwise. So we never really got to see Jerome Baker at his best. We'll see what the Seattle Seahawks end up doing with him. But if Channing Tindall can act as a pass rushing linebacker, then there might be something there. Like, even if it's just situational, you want to talk about a speed package, you throw Channing Tindall into the mix. Like, teams are going to have issues stopping all that if you're going to send them on a blitz. And that actually ties into the next thing, because if you feel confident enough to send a blitz, you have to be able to have confidence in your secondary that they're going to hold down the line, which makes it back to where we're talking about here. So I broke down the weapons currently at the Jaguars' disposal. I'm looking at the list. Who exactly, like Duke, you mentioned Evan Ingram is the guy you're worried about, but if we're talking about strictly as wide receivers, who is their number one? Is it Gabe Davis?
Is it Brian Thomas?
Okay, really? I considered Christian Kirk to be their number one.
Kirk is going to be more of a slot guy. I think a slot guy can be a number one. Don't get me wrong. Yeah,
like their number one target, not an outside receiver, but their number one target.
But I think Brian, like first round wide receivers for the most part, especially in recent memory. I mean, outside of, you know, the Jalen Ragers of the world, first round wide receivers are normally guys that step in and become number ones pretty quickly. So I would expect Brian Thomas is probably going to be the number one guy. And that's, if anything, the one thing that concerns me a little bit about this game is how aggressive Anthony Weaver has been in the preseason.
Eric. You're soft. And
listen.
Worried. Listen. Soft. No, just kidding.
I'm still picking them to win.
Yeah, I know.
I still got the Dolphins winning.
I don't think anybody wasn't, though.
But
I agree with you. I mean, we can't sit here and pretend like we're going to blow them away 52-0. Like they're a good team.
You know, Gabe Davis is for as much as he, you know, has hands of stone, when he does catch the ball, he's a very good deep threat. Brian Thomas can do the same. You know, I just worry that Anthony Weaver might get a little too blitz happy and, you know, maybe get beat once or twice with the big play.
Oh, we're gonna be blitzing. Like, just be ready.
Yeah. Oh, now, no,
I don't think though. Here's the thing: the Flores mantra or the Flores defense was, we're going to defend everything but the big play, and we're going to just make you try and just go, yep. you know, take the top off every time, because that's what we're going to leave. Because you got to leave something open. Like, every time you have a defense, you're leaving something open. It's just how it works. Even if you call it perfect, something is open somewhere. That was his thing. And then Fangio was completely different. We're like never hardly going to blitz, and we're going to protect the big play, and we're going to kind of leave underneath, you know, more soft. I'm not sure. I know Weaver's going to be blitzing because they blitz anyway. Yeah. Plus, we don't really have Phillips at full strength. We don't have Chubb back yet at all. So I imagine that means even more blitzing. We might be the number one highest blitzing percentage-wise in the league, I have a feeling, at least initially. But I don't know where they're expecting that kind of soft spot to be. I don't know if it means like the Flores days where, hey, just try and beat us deep then. You know, I'm not sure. It's really going to be interesting. I don't know a ton about this defense. Like, I got real comfortable watching the Flores defense and understanding it, and I started to get a hold of the Fangio defense. Now we got to relearn, right?
The question that I would have regarding the receivers, I would be, you know, as far as who would I be most concerned with, I would go with Christian Kirk, just because the last time we saw Kader Kohou play, he was not as good. He looked really good as a rookie, kind of struggled a little bit last season. He's your more than likely your primary nickel. Now, I think that they're going to move guys around. So I think Ramsey's going to be in the slot. Some Fuller's going to be in the slot, and they're going to mix and match. But he's a guy I would worry about just because he's facing Kohou. I'm not worried about Gabe Davis. I think Fuller or Ramsey or whoever can take care of him. And Brian Thomas is a rookie in his first game. If he draws Jalen Ramsey, that's a loss. I mean, he's not winning that matchup more than once a game. Even if he's a phenom as a rookie, he's just not doing it in his first game. So Christian Kirk would be the guy. Going back to what we originally discussed at the beginning, they also signed Devin Duvernay. I'm not kicking to that guy. I'm sorry. I'm just not. Kick it out of bounds. Let's make him start from the 30. Last time we faced him, I don't remember if he played last year or not for the Ravens. But the year before that, he started the game with a kickoff return touchdown. So, yeah, we're not doing that. Just kick the ball out of his hands. But as far as I would be concerned with Ingram, I would be concerned with Kirk, and I would be concerned with Etienne out of the backfield. Those are just areas that the Dolphins have struggled in. And as much hype as we have for this linebacking group, you know, how much do you trust a guy like Channing Tindall if he's forced into a coverage situation to pick up a guy like Etienne coming out of the backfield and play great coverage? Because all it takes is that one bust, and you know, you talked about Trevor Lawrence earlier, and I don't have Trevor Lawrence in like the upper tier of quarterbacks yet. I just don't think he's produced enough, but he's still talented, and he makes those throws.
Let me tell you about Prize Picks. Prize Picks is America's number one daily fantasy sports app with over 5 million active members. Prize Picks is the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sport. All you do is pick more or less on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. Get in on the daily action with your friends and become part of the Prize Picks community today. Sign up today and get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It's guaranteed. One Caleb Williams passing yard gets you one win on Prize Picks every week in September. That's right. Only 1 yard gets you an automatic win every football weekend in September. 4 weeks of free W's. Don't miss this deal on Prize Picks because it's gone when September ends. Football is on the way, so do as I do and make Monday and Thursday night football more interesting. Download the Prize Picks app today and use the promo code 3YARDS. That's the number 3YARDS and get $50 instantly when you play $5. That's the code 3YARDS on Prize Picks to get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It's guaranteed. Prize Picks, run your game.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So, you know, I'm worried about some of those ancillary players more than their receivers. I think they might try to scheme their way away from those guys, you know, maybe use Thomas as a decoy. Like, you know what? You're going to be facing one of the best corners in football. You're not winning that matchup. Just go out there and run your routes. We're not going to throw you the ball, and we're going to hope other guys can win. Maybe they don't. I don't know. But I would be more concerned about the third, fourth, and fifth guys more so than the top two.
And now we can flip over to the other side of the football. So obviously this is where Miami shines, right? We already know what we should be expecting when it comes to the offense, because it's probably
the number one offense in the history of the NFL is what I'm expecting. And in the past, when I ever said that, it sounded completely stupid. But now as I say it, I don't think it's stupid.
You said that when Tannehill was out there, they're averaging 19 points a game.
Probably I did. So it maybe it it means a little less now that I've said it 24 times in a row.
But that was the promise that Adam Gase gave us, right? Like, he was going to be the offensive guru, and Peyton Manning loved him.
That one game against the Raiders was magical. You know, I'll give him that. I'll give him that. Game.
Listen, nothing will ever be more magical than the Miami Miracle, which Tannehill did throw that football.
Tannehill did have a few throws, man. Like, under Gase, Gase did help Tannehill get that long ball much better.
Because Jay Ajayi was taking most of the heat off.
Or actually, it was probably Zach Taylor, who is currently the coach of Cincinnati, who was our QB coach at the time. He definitely got into Tannehill and helped him with that deep ball, because it was terrible until he got there. He did have a few good throws, but I know we're not here to talk about Tannehill. Man, I hope we're not.
I thought Zach Taylor got sacked along with the rest of the Bullygate people.
No. That was afterwards. Zach Taylor was there under Gase as our QB coach for a bit. And then he went over to the Rams under
McVay.
McVay, thank you. Yeah. And then he ended up in Cincinnati at there. But anyway.
You're thinking of Jim Turner, probably. He was the airline coach that got dumped.
No, I'm saying because he was Mike Sherman's nephew or something.
He was his son-in-law.
Son-in-law. Okay, there it is.
If you want to talk about a good Tannehill throw, and I remember this like it was yesterday.
Oh, my God. Are you going to
– The Rams?
No, it wasn't the Rams. It was the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Chargers throw was great. But against the Steelers in 2016, Tannehill, he gets pressure up the middle from the nose tackle. He bounces off the tackle, rolls to his left, and chucks it about 40 yards downfield to Marquise Gray for a huge completion. He's right-handed, rolling to his left, and uncorks a dime that rivals anything you'll see from Mahomes or Allen. It was one of the best throws he's ever made in his career. It was that good. And, of course, the drive stalled because of other stupid reasons. Not of his fault, but that was probably the best throw I've ever seen him make. So if you want to go back and watch that game, 2016, Pittsburgh Steelers, beautiful throw.
I mean, I would argue that the throw that Kenny Stills dropped –
in the Seattle game.
Yeah.
But I mean, let's just end the old conversation about the Dolphins there and talk about the real number one offense in the history of the NFL. It's going to be the Miami Dolphins this year. I am most excited to see what they're going to be doing with the run game and how they're going to be involving the tight ends, because I know they got something. They got something cooking. We don't know what it is, but we know it's something. Something new, some new fun wrinkle that rivals is equal to or even more, game affecting, like the little, what's the word I'm looking for there? The little motions, right? Those little mini motions they do. It's going to be something fun. We just don't know what it is. Can't wait to see it.
I mean, I'm sure that they're going to lean on Jonnu Smith now, because simply put, again, Miami's roster right now, as far as weapons go, it's a little shaky. Like, Tyreek is practicing, which is great. Yeah, Jalen Waddle is practicing, as far as I'm aware, which is great.
Yeah, they're going to both play.
They're going to both play.
You would see, if they thought that there was a chance that those two weren't playing, you would see something happening right now.
Eric, I'm confused. What's going on? Why are you freaking out?
Did I just hear you say that the Dolphins' weapons are shaky?
For the moment.
I think he meant health-wise, not talent-wise.
Okay.
Yeah, for the moment.
But here's the thing.
Even putting that aside, their backfield counts as weapons. You know that,
yeah,
right?
I was getting into that, Eric. Okay, I was getting into that.
Last year, the Miami Dolphins went into the season with the most dynamic playmaker in the NFL. And this year, they go into the season with the top two most dynamic playmakers in the NFL in Tyreek Hill and Devon Achane. So that's step one right there. And now they also have... they have a tight end. They have two better tight ends than they had last year. Because honestly, now you have Julian Hill out of nowhere, and you have Jonnu Smith, and you still have Smythe. So it's going to be fun and interesting and exciting. And let's not forget, you still have record-breaking Mostert there, and Jeff Wilson, and you got a rookie Jalen Wright if you really want to mix it up. Oh, yeah, that guy Jalen Waddle, he's pretty good too. Yeah, I think we're going to be okay, man. I think we're going to be okay. And I'm excited to see how they work Malik Washington in a bit.
Well, that's what I meant, though, when I say that the weapons are shaky, is like the wide receiver room is really banged up. And right now, your number three is Berrios. And we were doing everything humanly possible to avoid that. So I see Eric shaking his head like it's Malik Washington. I'm not buying it. I'm not.
Your number three wide receiver is Devon Achane. That's what
And Jonnu.
Combination of those two. Like, I remember like it was years ago. So last week when the other Eric, Coach Eric, came on with Hassan, right? And they talked about this F position. Did anybody notice that when the depth chart was released, there was no fullback? Like, they nailed it, nailed that whole F position thing. It's going to be real interesting. Watch. This is going to be an even more interesting and different type of looking offense wrinkle than I believe that we even saw last time going into the start of the season. I think it's going to be very exciting. Yeah, the depth chart actually shows F and not wide receivers three. So I think that's why they're less freaked out about it. Thank you for that, Jason Stamps, for bringing that up.
I said that last week that they're going to run a lot of like 12 personnel, 22 personnel, 21 personnel. You're going to see a lot of extra tight ends on the field, at least until Beckham gets back. And I think they'll work him in to do a lot of 11 personnel just because he is who he is and he's that good. But we're going to see a lot of we might even see three running backs on the field at the same time. And honestly, the Dolphins are probably one of the few teams that can run three running backs and two tight ends and still go five wide and get 10 yards. That's how they are. Jacksonville last season was, I think, 26th in pass defense. They were 26th or 7th in sack percentage defensively. Yeah, these boys are going to eat.
Yeah, they're going to rely on Jonnu Smith a lot. And until Odell Beckham comes back in about 4 weeks or so, give or take, I think by the time the four week time limit will be over and he'll be off the pup list and he'll be doing stuff again. We're going to see more of some of the other receivers on the roster. I'm hoping that they'll probably end up calling up Eric Ezukama at some point, which I'm cool with. He just adding him from back onto the practice squad. You know, it's funny. We keep talking about how, oh, so-and-so is going to get poached. So-and-so is definitely going to get poached. 1,000% he's going to get poached. It's not until after all that was over and done with. Like, Chris Brooks just landed with the Green Bay Packers as an injury settlement, not because he got poached from our initial cuts. Like, we had to actually release the guy.
And he's on their practice squad, by the way, too. He didn't get signed to the roster. He's on their practice squad. So that meant we kind of decided it was time to just move on and explore other, developmental running backs.
And of course,
not that he wasn't
good.
They could
sign him back at some point, I suppose, if there was enough injuries.
They
could say, hey,
if they needed to, yeah, exactly. They could just rip him right off the practice squad unless they have him protected, which he's probably not a player they would protect. Usually you're going to protect veterans or guys you really don't want to lose. And you can only protect guys for so long, from what I understand. Coach Smith has, I guess he's listening. Coach Smith just said in the chat, Smythe Hill listed as tight end. And Jonnu Connor listed as F leads me to believe that Jonnu will be more of the F wide receiver three when Alec Ingold leaves the field. Man, imagine being a defense having to figure out all that crap with no tape, like nothing but that depth chart. If they even looked at it, I assume they did, and be like, what is
you
this?
You know, mix? I've always said that I'm not a fan of Saturday football on Sundays. I want to watch Sunday football. And that's always had a certain look. And I know I'm older, and that's a thing. But dadgummit, if Mike McDaniel isn't bringing Saturday football to Sundays, and like you sitting there saying that stuff, and I was like, I watch these guys on social media, like Coach Dan Casey's a guy I follow on Instagram, and he's always posting like these college plays and these various plays. It would not surprise me to see them roll out like some kind of triple option, something.
a little Georgia Tech Navy action.
Yeah, just some wild, heck, even like a wildcat look. That's not even a wildcat, just some crazy something where they can get guys moving and doing things. Because like I said, we have so many weapons that are diverse. I mean, Hill can run the ball if you want him to. He played running back in college. You've got guys like Smith who you're going to line up and can pass out of the backfield. You could have like a heavy set looking, you know, four guys in the backfield kind of look and still come out with some crazy pass play out of it. So I'm excited to see some of those new wrinkles. I also want to see him just line up and run the ball, just go downhill too. And I think we're going to see that with Wright and even Mostert. Mostert runs hard too. So I'm looking forward to all of that. But, yeah, I think you're right. I think they've got some extra wrinkles with these guys that we're just not prepared for, and, quite frankly, the league's not prepared for.
And it all comes right back down to Tua, though, doesn't it? This guy, he's going to see his first action against his the guy that so many people wanted. Like, I'm sure that there were still many Dolphins fans saying, you know what, we should have waited one more year and gotten Trevor. And I think – like we already faced him once, right? The Jaguars one time. Was it even Trevor Lawrence? I don't think it was. I think it was. Was he hurt?
It was Trevor Lawrence.
That was their first. That was their first win under Urban Meyer.
Yep.
Oh yeah. Okay. So technically the Dolphins lost their first matchup. That's it.
That was in London.
Yep.
So this is the Dolphins' next rematch, and
it's a revenge game.
And the other thing about it is that we haven't even really mentioned this yet. Ethan Skolnick was looking for input on season predictions so that he could put up an article. I put out mine and I said that the Dolphins are going to go 11-6. That's my official prediction as of this point, just after everything that's all been said and done. And the biggest part of that is just sheer and utter continued dominance at home. Miami's at home, and I get that there's no like, oh, it's too hot, Jacksonville can't handle it. It's still Florida. It's not going to be a thing for them.
It's our only 1 o'clock game in Miami until late October. Ever since that Buffalo game, they have finagled the schedule so teams don't have to come play Miami in the dead of summer heat at 1 o'clock, except for Jacksonville, who's already a Florida team. So I guess they figured it wouldn't matter. But I'll be honest, I've lived in Florida my entire life. I live smack dab in between, pretty much, Jacksonville and Miami, almost right in between, in Brevard County, there at the Space Coast, the Cape Canaveral area. And you can feel the heat and especially the humidity difference between Jacksonville and Miami. I promise you, you can. There is definitely an obvious difference. I can feel the difference when I go down from Brevard County to Miami. I know that you feel it from Jacksonville to Miami. So they'll still have an advantage in there. It just wouldn't be as great an advantage of like, hence, you know, bringing Buffalo into it like a few years back.
I mean, the advantage is going to be just the fact that it's not even about the heat. Miami has proven over the past couple of years, ever since McDaniel showed up, that playing at home is one of the easiest things in the world for them. And everybody's going to be hyped up. Everybody's going to be excited to go for the home opener. The Dolphins, I really believe this. Maybe this is finally the one game where half the stadium is not filled with the other team's fans. Maybe it's just finally. Maybe just this once. Just this once. I think that the Dolphins fans are actually going to heavily outnumber the Jacksonville fans. Just this once. And I think it's going to make a huge impact. People are going to be cheering, Tua. Like, if they're actually going to actually enjoy the fact that they have a franchise quarterback and a head coach to go with it that have shown more promise than pretty much any of the predecessors that have been since Don Shula. And this is coming from somebody who liked Tony Sperano, and I think that he didn't get nearly as much credit as he should have. I feel like he was a lot better than anybody remembers. But there's no question that ever since Don Shula, the closest that anybody has had to true greatness, like there's one thing about this team that you can absolutely say you can trust that this is going to be top five in the NFL on a consistent basis. It's Mike McDaniel. Like you could even, if you wanted to, you could try to argue that Brian Flores could have made a top five defense every year. You could try. Like the defense was good, but there was always that lingering doubt because of the philosophy, because people were starting to catch on to the zero blitzing nonsense.
Oh yeah. They eventually had to just let that. You don't really see that by the next year. The only place, I think by like maybe 2 years ago, the only place you really saw that was Minnesota, and the Giants were still doing it, trying to hang on to it a little bit, and that was it.
And realistically, it was a crutch because, let's face it, those Flores teams in the first year or two were just so bereft of talent, they just had to do something to try to make something happen defensively. You know, I don't think that was going to be the plan long term. But regardless, I agree with the overall sentiment that, you know, if you have Mike McDaniel and you have Tua and you have some of the players that they have, you've got an automatic top three offense in the league.
Jeffrey Matricino, I apologize if I say your name wrong, boss. What is one play you think they will unveil on Sunday? I guess we're getting into some X's and O's here.
We got to get to create our own play. Well, I tell you what, I would be embarrassing at this, but I'm going to try it. But Duke, I want Duke to go first. I think you probably would be the best at it. I will be the worst, so I'll go last.
I got to think about it.
Yeah, we're going to just pretty much, this is fun. We're just pretty much creating. I don't know.
You know, I was reading some stuff today. And the name Bill Simmons came up, and I remember reading Bill Simmons' article from years ago. You know, this nearly 20 years ago, and he was talking about how the Patriots used to Belichick would play what they call the Milton Berle game, and I will let you look that up on your own time. But it was basically you show just enough to win, and I think that's what they're going to do this week: is show just enough to win, not go too deep into the playbook, because they've got that Thursday night game against Buffalo that's coming up. And that's where they're going to break out the stuff that legends are made of. That said, I think we're going to see a tackle eligible goal line play and Patrick Paul get something like a touchdown look.
You're going to have Patrick Paul scoring a touchdown?
I'm just saying that would be a play that I would expect him to break out. Because I think they're going to use him in that regard. I think they're going to go some heavy sets. And so I think they will do that and use a lot of these motions and send Hill and Waddle in the same direction or do some kind of crazy mess. And they're going to forget that he's there. And Tua's just going to lob it over. Either that or something like a Devon Achane jump pass to Raheem Mostert or some kind of nonsense like that. I don't expect to see a lot of the true trickery until week two, maybe even week three. It wasn't until last year, I believe, that we saw the no look pass and all that was week three. So I think it's going to be a little bit later on in the season before they get that deep. So but I think we'll see something cool, like a tackle eligible pass or something like that. So
My father wants to point out in the chat that once upon a time, my family and I went to a Jacksonville Jaguars game because my father was stationed in Jacksonville, and their fans are not obnoxious, and Jacksonville fans are actually civilized. I don't deny that, and I remember Mother Dear getting the little jaguar ears. She thought they were very cute, but it's not about whether the Jaguars fans are civilized or not. It's just that every single game that we have at Hard Rock Stadium, it always seems like there's more of the other team's fans than there are of Miami fans, even when they're winning. So I feel like this might be the one time that maybe that won't be the case.
Well, I will say this, that I don't know what it was like there, but watching the Dallas game last year, you know, everyone remembers, you know, the Dak Prescott cadence. Oh, here we go. And
then, here we go.
I never heard I never heard that one in the Dolphins game. So it sounded like to me the crowd was so loud that you couldn't hear his cadence. So they shut up for the Cowboys game. So maybe it's just because it's, you know, the Bills or the Jets or, you know, the Patriots or whoever else, and they've got fans down there. But, yeah, I think they showed out for that Dallas game.
Eric. What's your play, man? I don't want to get. I want everybody to get this play in.
Oh man! All right. Should I? All right. We're gonna see a lot of Devon Achan lined up outside, and Mike McDaniel, the madman that he is, he's gonna throw a fade pattern to Devon Achan.
I don't like that, actually. I hate when we throw.
You know what? You didn't say that it had to be a good play. It's just a play.
You think a true fade pattern or like a wheel route? Now, a wheel route,
I can see. No, I mean, if I'm being realistic, I think you might see Jonnu Smith motion into the backfield and take a handoff from a true halfback position.
Okay.
In some of those. Short yardage situations.
Yeah, that one's sort of close to mine. Lewis, what you got?
All right, ready for this?
I'm ready.
We're going to show off the improved athleticism, the new slimmer version. It's going to be a design bootleg run for Tua.
Okay, yeah. You know what? I 100% say that.
Duke's like, no.
That's an easy one.
No.
Oh, that's an easy Duke, it's happening. That's an easy one. They're going to let. They're going to let Tua run a little bit. They're going to do it early, like real early in the game to make the team realize, oh, crap, Tua's going to run now. We got to figure that out. That's what I think. All right, here's mine. All right, so you're going to have one of those situations where you have motion coming. Jonnu, he'll motion out to the left tackle. Then he'll come back. He'll motion to the right. And just it's going to be one of those perfectly timed snaps where it snaps to Tua, and then he hands it off to Jonnu as he's running by. Achan was going to be back to Tua's right, and it's going to be Jonnu and Achan running the option. That's my play. Let's see. Let's see if any of these plays happen. I'll be curious.
That's a week two in Buffalo play.
You think so? Okay, well, let's see. Maybe it'll happen. But that's my play. And if it's not written in the playbook, well, put it in there, man. Put it in there.
I feel like the most realistic one is probably mine, just because it's the most simple.
Oh, yours is 100% happening. Sorry, Duke. They're definitely gonna. They're definitely gonna try and run Tua some.
You don't think they would take a shot at Devon Achane on a fade route?
Are you telling me that?
I don't think they should take a shot at anybody on a fade route. That is not something we do well.
Are you telling me Patrick Paul is not scoring the first passing touchdown of the season?
Yeah,
that would be hilarious.
It would be hysterical. Robert Hunt somewhere in Carolina is looking at the score and saying, wait, who scored? You couldn't let me do it, but you're going to let this guy I leave?
Who got the first receiving touchdown last year? If you can remember.
I thought it was Tyreek.
I don't remember. Probably Tyreek.
River Craycraft.
Oh, Craycraft. Oh yeah! Speaking of shaky,
he was the second overall touchdown. Mostert had a rushing touchdown. River Craycraft had the first receiving touchdown.
Jason Stamps has a play: Wildcat 25 threatens the inside run, and 28 on the jet sweep with 31 is the trigger man. There you go. Look at these.
So you got
all these fun plays.
You got Jalen Wright,
and then they throw a fade to Tua.
Yeah. Oh, no. Now that I'm out on. Now I am out
defenseless
on
receiver.
Passes.
Defenseless
they won't,
receiver.
They won't even be covering him. What are you,
no
what are you
Philly special, right? Is that what it was called? The Philly yeah, special? We don't yeah, want that. Don't want that. Too risky.
What are the odds, though? What are the odds, though, that we see a Grant DuBose touchdown?
Very low. I think they might have a package of
two plays for him.
Let's see who they bring up. I think they're gonna bring up Eazy-E
if he's
onto
healthy.
Yeah onto from the practice squad onto there. And I just don't know how much. I don't even know if DuBose even. I'm not even sure he's on the active roster. Probably, but I'm not even 100% sure he's on the active roster. I think they're gonna go with the five wide receivers. And they're including bringing up Eazy-E. They'll have Berrios. Obviously, they'll have Washington, Waddle, and Hill. And they're going to be using a lot of other players to catch passes too, like Achan, a de facto receiver in some regards, Janu, all that. So I kind of think like they probably won't week one. That's my thoughts. I kind of think DuBose is like the eventual replacement for Craycraft. I think he's like, let's grab this guy now. Let's keep him here. We're going to develop them, and next year we start to kind of use them in more of a Craycraft role. That's just my thought process on why they grabbed him. Just not sure how much we see him this year.
Although I guess we kind of traded, didn't we? If we really want to think of it one by one for one,
yeah,
we swiped out Chris Brooks for Grant DuBose.
I think the Packers signed Brooks out of spite because they were not happy that we snagged DuBose. Yeah, they are not happy.
All right, we're getting close to that time. I always try to end it with a long, drawn-out process. I'll just go ahead and just get scores for now because I think most of the folks who are here on this show, they'll probably be available for pregame and postgame. Ron, are you available for pregame?
Yeah, this Sunday. Yeah.
Yeah, this upcoming Sunday.
Yeah, Duke pregame, and Eric, postgame. You too. You'll see me both. Yep.
Yeah, so we got our whole – you know what? Actually, knowing that Duke, you too, pregame?
Should be.
So
knowing
that it's all three of us and plus me all going to be on the same show again for pregame, I'm gonna skip the score predictions for now because we're already at time.
Oh, really? No.
Yeah,
no.
We're going
to
skip
it. I'll do score prediction. 42-24. Too bad. Got to cut it out. 42-24 Miami.
Whatever, Ron. And I see if you remember that when you show up on Sunday morning.
Oh, I will 100% remember it.
All right. So Jason Stamps giving his prediction, 38-24 Fins. All right, man. Hey, listen, I'd be very happy if that's the case. Like I said, we're going to skip it here because it's going to be all the same four of us who are going to be doing pregame so we can get into our predictions, our underrated, overrated, and our, of course, our price picks, folks. We got to do that.
Before we leave, though, is there anybody here that thinks Miami's going to lose? Lewis, you're usually the guy.
Miami will lose in week two against Buffalo.
No, they're definitely winning that game, by the way. I feel better about that game than I feel about this game.
I have to see it to believe it.
When we did the show several weeks back with Alpha here and we did the game-by-game prediction, I think Lewis and I were the only two that picked that game to lose. So I feel you there, Lewis. It's one of those, they've got to beat Buffalo before I pick them to beat Buffalo.
Pretty much.
But I will say this before we go regarding Jacksonville. This was a team that was a playoff contender and potential division winner last year before Trevor Lawrence gets hurt. They fell apart late because of the injuries. So this is not an easy out or a cakewalk by any means. Now, I don't think their receiving corps is good. They lost Calvin Ridley, and he was a better player than what they have. But I don't see this as a – you know, I started looking at the schedule, and maybe it's the skeptic coming at him, but I started looking at the schedule, and I was like, I don't know, man. That team's going to be better than what I think. Even
there's also going to be teams that are going to be worse than you think, and that's harder to see sometimes at the beginning of the season is who's going to be worse than you think. Yeah, maybe.
I hope so.
Maybe. I don't think we beat Buffalo week two because they're worse. I just think that Miami's going to have that stink to them this year that – like I think they're pissed about being so disregarded and so disrespected, considering how good that offense is and how much talent is on that team. Like I saw power rankings today that had Miami at 16 under Tampa and the Falcons. Yeah, bro.
The Falcons.
Yes. Where are the Falcons?
Hey, listen.
They were at like 13.
Who was that? Put them on blast.
Why? It was either
Fox or it was one of the major ones. It was posted in 3 yard, the 3 yards per carry, the OnlyFins, everybody, not fans.
Discord.gg/OnlyFins, $3.
There you go. It was posted in there. I'm sorry if I don't recall exactly who it is. It was one of the major ones, but Fox had us at like 14. So, and one of them, and the other one had us at like 16. Yeah, there's no respect for Miami.
NFL.com had us at 11, which pretty much is where they had us right after
that's,
the draft.
That's so. Okay. That's a playoff team, you know?
Okay, as long as we're over Atlanta, I'm okay. Like adding Kirk Cousins suddenly makes the Falcons the most powerful team in the.
I liked the Falcons last year. I think I was just a year early. I actually don't dis. I like the Falcons. It's not
they're
going to
win
the Falcons.
They're
going to
win that division. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. It's just
Kirk Cousins.
Miami
healthy.
At 16. I don't care who's ahead of us. Well,
they
Miami
got a good
is 16.
Defense too.
Yeah, they do.
Ron Simmons, they've picked up. So.
They have a good team. Yeah, I think
Ron,
would be good.
Before we go to your point, I think that's one of the things that they're going to – that Mike McDaniel has heard all offseason is you can't win the big one. You've not won a playoff game. He's even talked about – what was that about? Everything was on the schedule, had to do with the number 24 or whatever it was, the number of years.
Yep.
All that stuff, he's heard it. The whole team's heard it. You're not good enough. You can't beat the good teams. You're not a contender. I think they're going to come into this season with a level of screw you. We're going to show you what we're about that we have not seen from a Dolphins team.
You can
in probably
feel
24 years.
You can feel something different from Tua. You can just feel it. I think you know you can. But I think a big one too was Poyer coming in and telling those guys. Bro, we were like making fun of you guys, like on the sideline. Every time we get up on you, we could see you over there crapping your pants. And I think it kind of awoke in Miami to realize. And I think Calais Campbell's another guy that's going to be like, you know, let's just get that nasty going. Because I liked Christian Wilkins. He was awesome. But I don't know if he was like nasty. He was a team leader for sure. So I just don't know how like, you know what I mean? And then maybe he was. I don't know. But I just feel like the Dolphins, especially on the defensive side, are looking to be like a more – I'm going to say it for you, Lewis, to make you feel so good, a more physical team. I know you like me to say that.
Well, did you know, what was it they said during like the training camp practice with Atlanta? It was the
Jordan
second
Poyer
day.
Said the Dolphins were perceived as soft. They were pushovers.
But the second day
you
of training
them in the
camp
mouth
against,
and
the
they
Falcons,
gave up.
Against the Falcons, the second day of training camp they said Chop Robinson was in the midst of a bunch of Atlanta Falcons players in a fight. The defense was just being ultra aggressive. I think they've got a little bit of that, what we've seen from other teams, not necessarily the physicality part, but just like, you know, we're going to leave our mark on you. You know, we're going to hit a little bit extra harder. We're going to play through the whistle. We're going to do a little bit of this extra stuff. And I think it's going to be on the defensive side of the ball. On the offensive side of the ball, we know what they can do. But if the offensive line, and I don't want to get into that discussion this late in the show.
We don't have any more time.
But
the offensive line.
If they get a little bit of that dog in them, look out.
Well, hopefully that's the case. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you all so much for joining us. We always appreciate having you on. We will be back here for pregame. On Sunday morning, either Sunday morning or right before, like in the like around noon, give or take. Depends on when I get out of church because I am still the worship leader. So depends on when I get out of church. But in any case, make sure once again you go to jerseys305.com. Use that promo code 5 to get 10% off your next order. We will see you all next time for another episode of Pulse of Fins Nation. Well, hopefully we will be discussing probably the next game because it's Thursday night football. But anyway, like I said, we will see you all next time.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.